Good morning, everybody. So I'm the lead scientist with the water team with the Nature Conservancy, and I feel like I'm a little bit out of my element today, too, because I'm going to be talking about aquatic ecosystems and particularly effects of drought on aquatic ecosystems and how that might help to inform what we can expect in the future. And when it comes to aquatic ecosystems, everything's local. So it's not that easy for us to think about broad patterns of precipitation and what it might mean in a river to a particular organism or species. And this is the American River for Ron right here. Sacramento Bar. So we know some of the general patterns of precipitation and river flow changes that we would expect to see in the future. We know that we're going to have less snowpack, earlier snow melt, more precipitation falling as rain, higher winter flows, and maybe more drier summers. We know that we should have more extreme precipitation events. But what does that mean in the river looking at a hydrograph? Because really, that's when we're thinking about aquatic species and ecosystems, that's what we need to understand. And the interesting thing is that we don't even know that much about what happens currently in the rivers of California. The Nature Conservancy spent some time looking at all the stream gauges across the state. We put together an online tool called the Gauge Gap tool and found that 86% of rivers in the state are poorly gauged. So we don't have a good handle on what current flows are in a lot of places or what unimpaired flows might be, natural flows, if you didn't have any human alteration. And so when we, as part of the Nature Conservancy, thought about this question, we thought, can we get a handle on statewide patterns of expected natural flows and flow alteration? And then we can use that data to look at the most recent drought and see if that can inform future conditions and help us look at what flows are needed to support ecological function. So one of the first things we did was work with USGS and UC Berkeley and some other partners to predict natural flows for all streams in the state of California on the NHD Plus stream hydrography data set. And what we did is we identified a set of 250 reference gauges in the state, and then we used a machine learning approach to predict natural flows, natural monthly flows, from 1950 to 2015. And we did it using climate data derived from PRISM and then a bunch of watershed variables derived from the Gauges 2 data set from USGS. Let me see if I can use my pointer here. Ah, there we go. So we had all this input data, and we tried to predict flows at reference gauges. And then once we had those flows predicted well, and we felt like we could adequately predict natural flow at reference sites, we then constructed these models to predict flows at ungauged locations and came up with a set of natural flow predictions everywhere in the state, and then if a flow is gauged, we looked at observed flows, and you can compare the two and look at patterns of alteration. And we put all of this online, so it's all available for people to use. We're calling it the California Natural Flows Database. If you go to the website, which I'll show you the link in a second, you can learn about the science, a little bit about how we did it. You can download any of the data you want using the API, and you can view the map and look at some visualizations. And this is what it looks like. So here's the website right here, rivers.codefornature.org. And this is just a snapshot. It's the whole state, but this is just a snapshot around Sacramento. There's a lot of blue lines and purple lines. And all the blue lines are places where we don't have stream gauges, but we predicted natural flows. And all the purple lines are places where we do have stream gauges. And so you can compare the two. And this just shows you what that interface looks like. You can select months, you can select years from 1950 to 2015. And we looked at mean, we predicted monthly mean, minimum, and maximum, as well as 80% confidence intervals around that. And then we put some visualizations together. So if you click on a stream segment, this is one that does not have a gauge. This is from 1950 to 2015, the monthly mean flows you would expect to see in wet years. And then this is the whole, all years combined over that period of record, and then dry years. And then this is just a gauge that has, or a stream segment that has a gauge on the Sacramento River. So the same thing, but this purple line shows gauge observations. And then we did an analysis for the places where there are gauges. We looked at unimpaired flows, which of those places with gauges have flows that fell outside of that 80% prediction interval for our modeling, and what patterns of stream alteration look like for the state. So I'm going to show you a few of these maps right here. And in these maps, depleted flows are shown with orange dots, and inflated flows are shown with blue, and then the size of the dot is the magnitude of the alteration. So overall, we found that 95% of rivers in the state with gauges show some degree of alteration. And in most places, we see both inflation and depletion. So it's not like we're just taking out a bunch of water and it's flow depletion everywhere. It's more complicated than that. So this set of maps was monthly mean flows. And then these two show more of the extremes. So this top set is the one-day annual maximum flow, and then the bottom set is the one-day annual minimum flow. And what this shows us is that the maximum flows tend to be pretty depleted, and the minimum flows tend to be pretty inflated. Not everywhere, but generally across the state. So we've done a really good job of what we set out to do with our water infrastructure. We've moved water from the wet parts of the state to the dry parts, and from the wet times of the year to the dry times of the year. So what does this mean for the future? Can we predict what this might look like under climate change? And some of my co-authors on that study, including Ted Grantham and with Berkeley, UC Berkeley, Darren Carlisle with USGS, and Jeanette Howard, who's my colleague at the Nature Conservancy, worked on this paper to look at stream flow under climate change in California. They broke up the state into three regions: coastal, which is up here, xeric, and interior mountain. And they found pretty much what you'd expect. They tried to predict monthly flows and found that flows tended to be somewhat inflated in the winter, but the most significant effect was this decrease in summer flows, particularly June and July, in the interior mountains. So this suggests that we would expect those dry parts of the year to get drier. But, like I said before, when you're talking about aquatic ecosystems, it matters what they're experiencing in a particular location. And 95% of the rivers in the state are altered. So there's this significant signature of human alteration that we have to consider. So I'm going to show some hydrographs. These are actually monthly mean flow values for several different stream gauges. And this is all public, too. This is based on our natural flow prediction data, but we have it in a Tableau site, so you can do some more in-depth visualizations. And this gauge is the Sacramento River at Keswick, so that's downstream of Shasta. This shows the average monthly flow from October 2010 to August 2015. So this first year here was a wet year. This is pre-drought. And then we have the drought years. Now, the predicted unimpaired flow is this dark gray line, and then the 80% confident or prediction interval is the lighter gray lines, and the observed flow from the stream gauge is in blue. So what we see from the Sacramento River is that we don't see lower flows during the drought. During the wet years, you have your highest flow of the year in the winter, like you would expect under natural conditions. And we have some elevated summer flows, but it's still, the pattern is similar to what you would expect. During the drought, it flips. So our highest flow of the year tends to be in July or August, and the lowest flow of the year is in March. This is the McCollumy River, which is further south, downstream of a smaller gauge where there's less storage. But still, we see a similar pattern, more pronounced, where we have the wet year, where the flows follow a more natural pattern. And then when it gets dry, we see this flatlining of the hydrograph. So that's right below Comanche Dam. Farther downstream, once you have diversions, you see this more of the depletions during the summer. And then if you get even further to the south, this is in San Diego County, you see some of this extra water show up. This might be from the Colorado River. It might be, you know, we're not sure where the imports are, but here's the stream gauge data. So the predicted flows are pretty low. These are the drought years. And you see quite a bit of extra water. And there's some places in Southern California where that's even more pronounced. You just get a lot of wastewater outflow. You get a lot of urban runoff because there's imported water that is now being used during times of year when they wouldn't have seen it. And it ends up creating perennial streams in places where they would have been intermittent. So what does this do for the ecology? Well, a lot of our ecological studies are very site-specific, and it's hard to make broad generalizations over large spatial areas and over time. But we have a lot of information from the San Joaquin, so I'm just going to show you a little bit of that. Here is the same graph for the San Joaquin River at Vernalis. So again, we see higher flows in 2010, and then it drops during the drought period. So this is what the hydrology looks like. This is a graph that you see a lot when you work on salmon in the Central Valley. This was published in a paper in 2015. And it shows salmon escapement in green. Now, escapement are the adult salmon that return to a river. So these are all the returning adults to the San Joaquin system, which includes the Stanislaus, the Merced, and the Tuolumne. And it's plotted with Vernalis flow, so that's flow in the San Joaquin River at Vernalis from 2 years earlier. And the reason why we plotted against flow 2 years earlier is because that's when the juveniles are leaving the system, and that's when they need that cold water and faster-moving water for outmigration and inundation of rearing habitat for growth and survival. And you can see a pretty close pattern. It doesn't always hold up. This is the collapse from the lack of ocean upwelling. But in general, you can see a pretty tight correlation between river flow and salmon escapement. And what really matters, what seems to matter, is this variability. This is a figure from that flow alteration paper that we published last year. And this is data that was collected during a previous drought. So the years here are January of 1987 through 95 were these dry years, and then it got wet through 97. So this top panel shows hydrology. The orange is observed from the gauge on the Merced. The black are the natural flow predictions from the natural flows database, and then again, the light gray are those prediction intervals. And then this bottom panel show the proportion of non-native fish in samples that were collected by Larry Brown and colleagues from USGS. So during these really dry years, when flows were pretty much low and flat, you have a really high proportion of non-native species. They seem to do really well. Usually the water's warmer, less flow. And then once you get this natural variability back, that goes down quite a bit. So what are the mechanisms here? I mean, we know some of them, and we're investigating more just because it's complicated. One of the things we've been working on at the Nature Conservancy is to develop models of habitat need. So this figure right here is the acres of suitable habitat that would be needed on the Tuolumne River to support the number of juveniles that would be needed to produce the doubling goal. So that's a lot of kind of complicated information, but if you work in the Central Valley on salmon, the doubling goal was set by the Central Valley Project Improvement Act as a target to be reached for salmon recovery. And Every river has a target that was set by the anadromous fish restoration program at the Fish and Wildlife Service. So what we did is said, okay, if you have a doubling goal of a certain amount of adults returning, you would need to support a certain number of juveniles to be able to get there. And those juveniles need a certain amount of rearing habitat. We developed a tool along with Kramer Fish Sciences, and there's one for the Sacramento and the San Joaquin. This is the one for the San Joaquin, where you can click on any of the rivers in the Central Valley and look at these habitat needs. So this shows in the Tuolumne that we have juvenile fish that need rearing habitat from around mid-January to around mid-May. And the amount needed depends on the number of fish in the river and the size of the fish. So as the juveniles grow bigger, they need more territory for feeding, and they need a greater territory size, and it adds up faster, which is why you get this peak here, even though the greatest number of fish in the river are somewhere around here. So this looks an awful lot like a hydrograph. And this is just the hydrology of the Tuolumne River. This, again, is the wet year. And then you can see how low it gets during the drought. I did the same thing there. So in this wet year, you probably had enough flow variability to meet this target, or at least a good portion of it. But then during the drought years, hardly any of it was met because you're not getting water out of the channel. This is all off-channel habitat that inundates the floodplain and creates food resources necessary for juveniles to grow and be able to make it out of the river and through the delta. So when we think about surface water and in-stream flows, we usually think about precipitation and maybe dam operations and diversions, but we also need to think about groundwater surface water interactions, and this is a new area for us. We've been working a lot on groundwater and groundwater dependent ecosystems, which is what GDE stands for up here, but we haven't done a very good job of linking the two together, so we're starting to do more of that. This is a tool that we developed. The Nature Conservancy has developed quite a few tools related to groundwater-dependent ecosystems. This one's called GDE Pulse. You can find it here. This is also statewide. This is the Santa Clara River Corridor, which is a place where the Nature Conservancy owns quite a bit of property. And you can click on any polygon here and get, this is directly from the tool, you can get summer vegetation growth over 30 years. So this is 1985 to the present. This is summer, or this is vegetation water content, annual precipitation, and then depth to groundwater at a well, at the closest nearby well for that polygon that you select. So what's interesting here is that depth to groundwater over the last 10 years has gone down quite a bit. Recently, it's gone back up again, but it's gone down quite a bit, which correlates pretty strongly with vegetation growth and with vegetation water content, but not so much with precipitation. So you can't always use just precipitation to understand what's going on with ecosystems. What we saw in our property along this river is this. Let me see if I can. We have a drone now, so we've been taking some good shots on our property. So this is one of the Nature Conservancy properties along the Santa Clara. We had, in 2016, when this was taken, about 500 acres of dead shrubs. But when it kind of spans out, you can see bordering this that there's a lot of green ag fields where they were doing a lot of groundwater pumping. And what happened during this time is that this reach was a gaining reach, and it became where, you know, you were getting a lot of groundwater into the river, and then during the drought, it switched to a losing reach. So the depth of groundwater went down, and the stream itself lost in-stream flows because it was now losing water to the groundwater table. So what does this mean for ecosystems? Well, we It's slow going to set environmental flow recommendations throughout the state, but that's what needs to be done to really protect aquatic ecosystems under these drought conditions. This is a map from the State Water Board that shows all the streams with flow requirements in the state, and there really aren't that many. There's a lot more rivers than this. And the reason why it's slow going is because there's a lot of questions you have to answer. We need to know, what does it mean to sustain ecological outcomes? It's not always a single species approach, just there's a lot of different metrics you can use. You have to come up with your objectives. How do we consider multiple species? How do we analyze trade-offs between human use and ecosystem use? And we are working with partners right now to start to develop ecosystem flow requirements for the entire state that would apply to all these rivers that are in the NHD Plus hydrography data set. So we came up with a two-tiered system that we're calling the California Environmental Flows Framework, or CEF. And under tier one, we're setting flow requirements, well, not flow requirements, but flow recommendations and metrics based on functional flow components, which are important parts of the hydrograph for ecological outcomes, and that includes wet season initiation flows, like fall flow pulses, which are the transition between the dry season and the wet season, the peak magnitude flows in the winter and spring, a spring recession rate that is the transition between the wet season back down to the dry season, and dry season low flows. So you can define these boxes using things like magnitude, duration, and timing, and ranges of natural variation, and set some boxes on a hydrograph. So for the South Fork American River, just as an example, this is the fall flow pulse. That would be your winter high flow, spring recession rate, and the summer base flow. And then you can look at where you fall in there. So you can see that summer might be making it, fall might be making it, but your winter, spring high flows are too low, and your spring recession rate, you're also not within that box. So you can start to say, where do I need to do more? Where am I maybe not meeting my ecological needs? With the knowledge that this isn't going to work everywhere, because there's a lot of places where we have human needs for water, and you have to look at trade-offs, in which case it would bump you into a tier two approach, which would be a refinement of those initial flow metrics based on your management objectives and using more local data and more developed or more intricate modeling. And if you want to look at the initial website, we have that up and running where we're starting to put some of our initial products. And eventually, all of those flow metrics will go on the Natural Flows database website. So just in summary, we've come up with a lot of statewide tools to help us understand the patterns in how flows are changing and effects of drought. But really, when we think about drought effects, they depend on the water management infrastructure. So depending on how you manage your water, those human uses really are accentuated during the drought. And instead of being this kind of signal that's buried within the noise, it becomes a really strong signal. And so the solution, we feel, is to protect and monitor these functional flows to make sure we're meeting those ecosystem needs. All right, thank you.
Any questions for Julie?
Thank you very much. Hello? Thank you. Can you comment at all on the deployment of infrastructure for measuring stream temperature in California? I know that this is a major gap in our understanding right now.
It is a major gap. We've talked a lot about that when we've talked about the stream gauges. So we have been doing a lot of work about the stream gauge network and how it, 86% of streams in the state are not well gauged. When new gauges do go in, we would love to see temperature as part of that. It's not that hard to do, once you're investing in a stream gauge. And so, I think it's a really important amount of data. We have not gotten to the point where we've done temperature modeling for the state like we're trying to work on with flow. But the way that we're dealing with it in the functional flow metrics and our two-tiered flow framework is that it would be part of a tier two process. So this is a more complicated discussion about setting environmental flows, but if you're going to set flow requirements for every stream statewide, our approach is to make it based on flow and keep it to those really key flow components that we know species respond to. And then if you know there's a temperature problem, that would be a reason that it would bump you into a tier two process where you say, okay, now maybe my flow metrics won't get me to the outcomes I'm looking for because I have high temperature in this place and I need increased summer flow just to mediate that, for example. And so that would be a different objective and a different ecological outcome that you're looking for, a different set of tools, and you would need a more kind of detailed analysis using maybe a different environmental flow approach that would be more localized. But the idea is to get a baseline that applies more broadly and then pick out those places where temperature or some other water quality issue or something else might be a problem and focus energy only where it's needed rather than what we have now where we have very few places with flow recommendations at all and a lot of kind of blank space on the map.
Any other questions?
Very nice talk, Julie. As you work on your flow prediction systems to call out for ecosystem needs, I'd recommend that you look at some of the results from the hydropower relicensing collaboratives that have gone on around the state, in particular the use of hydrologic year prediction based on snow surveys to help set environmental flow requirements for the coming year to be in keeping with the natural system. You can't make releases in a dry year that you might otherwise make in a wet year. And that's what a lot of the new flow regimes that are below developed hydro have in them already as a result of relicensings.
Yeah, thanks. Sarah Yarnell is part of our group, and she's been in a lot of relicensing processes, so she's helping to develop this. And this first work of the California Environmental Flows Framework, we've been working with the state board and set up a kind of companion group as part of the Water Quality Monitoring Council. So there's an environmental flows work group where our technical team has been presenting to them, and there's been a lot of agency folks that have attended our quarterly meetings and given us feedback about just that, for how they might use this process and where it might apply better than other places. And we've been looking for more of a collaboration as we move forward. So that's definitely been part of the discussion. And our first, it's new enough so that our first real task is to get out those tier one recommendations that's really based on natural hydrology and variability, and then to focus in on the places where we would need to apply different tools, and the FERC relicensing would be those types of places.
Could you comment on baseline in the context of climate change, and if these flow requirements would change over time based on changing unimpaired flow estimate, or would a baseline kind of stick, and what would be the update process if there was one?
Right. So right now we're looking at the time period 1950 to 2015, and we are working on updating that over time so that we get new natural flow predictions. And I think as we do that, we can look at those trends in natural flows. But our thought right now is that the signal of climate change is really dwarfed by the signal of human use and human alteration. And of course, they're correlated, right? I mean, they're all interconnected because climate change changes human use, which then changes what you experience in the river. But if you look at alteration, the signature of human use is much greater currently than a reference gauge where you're only looking at a climate change signature. So we are trying to develop it for current conditions now to kind of deal with how we manage water and use water. And then that is our next step. And we've been talking a lot about it. It's not that we're going to ignore it, but we're just kind of saving that for our next phase of our project.
Okay, I think we're going to move on to the next speaker. Thank you.